Hello and welcome to the Thursday, February 2nd edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from the KTOO studios. Like usual, we've got a very interesting show. We'll start with chatting with Ernestine Hayes, who's a Junoite who's just been named Alaska's Writer Laureate. Then we'll hear about North Razor Clams. That's right. And then we'll talk to Chef Steph. She's the featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery's First Friday, which is tomorrow. And then we'll end with Nancy DeCherney. Always a party to find out what's going on in Alaska's capital city in the art scene. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Association passed a resolution this week to authorize tribes to negotiate functions of state governments with the United States, essentially cut out states and work directly with the federal government. Chairman Harold Frazier of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe offered the resolution. He says as sovereign nations, tribes have the right to do so, adding states are not looking out for tribal interests.
Why do we have to deal with the state? You know, a lot of Indian people, we look at it like this, you know, we have a treaty with the federal government, and why is the states involved into our business? And I think that we're at a time and we shouldn't have any kind of contact with state governments. In the Dakotas, we have not a very good working relationship with state governments. I mean, historically, you know, they've always tried to encroach on our sovereignty, on our jurisdiction, and that's something that we will not tolerate.
Frazier thinks the resolution will not go over well with the Trump administration and will likely be ignored.
In the eyes of the Trump administration, you know, they still look at like they did when they discovered America, that Indian lands are open for land grab. I think they just look at tribal governments as just a hurdle for them to get access to our land. So I'm not too optimistic for any kind of improvement from the Trump administration as far as building a better life for our people.
The resolution passed unanimously by the group, which is made up of 16 tribal leaders in the states of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. 74 people were arrested in North Dakota on Wednesday by the Morton County Sheriff's Department. A group of demonstrators opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline started a new camp on higher ground near the main camp, which is located on a flood zone. Police say the group set up the camp on private property. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe issued a statement Wednesday saying the group's actions do not represent the tribe. The statement goes on to say the actions put the tribe's work to stop the pipeline at risk, as well as people's lives. Many demonstrators have vowed to stay and fight the pipeline on site, while the tribe is asking people not to return to the main camp and to take the battle to Washington and court. Videos flooded social media Wednesday afternoon showing militarized officers and demonstrators at a standoff on Highway 1806 while arrests were made on a nearby hill. The Canadian government says it wants to negotiate claims from what's known as the 60s scoop. That's when Indigenous children were forcibly taken from their families and placed in non-Native homes. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The federal government is already facing a class action lawsuit over the 60s scoop, and this offer to negotiate may be an attempt to head off that $1.3 billion legal action. The Minister of Indigenous Affairs, Carolyn Bennett, says she wants to resolve this dark and painful chapter in Canadian history. She said the government and the country's Indigenous people are no longer adversaries and that negotiation rather than litigation is how the government would like to settle differences and right historical wrongs. She added that resolving cases like these is an important step in the journey towards reconciliation with Native people. But Bennett's statement was short on details. Manitoba has already apologized for its role in the scoop and is considering some compensation. Saskatchewan says it will offer an apology, but without compensation. Maggie Bluewater is one of the people who had joined the class action suit.
Let's be realistic here. To move forward takes dollars and cents for us to gather our lives together, to learn our language again.
The Ontario lawsuit was filed in 2009. It alleges that about 16,000 Indigenous children who were at risk in Ontario suffered a devastating loss of identity when they were placed in non-Native homes between 1965 and 1984 as part of a federal-provincial agreement. The government admits the children may have suffered harm, but says it's not liable because it was acting with good intentions at the time. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And right now we, the collective we, Juno, the city and borough of Juno, is under a high wind warning. They're expecting wind up to 60 miles an hour in downtown. Right now, it's sunny, it's high near 28, and the winds, they're saying, is about 15 miles per hour with good gusts downtown. Tonight, it's going to go down to 23, and that advisory is on until Saturday. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 29, and Friday night, low around 19, and sunny again, high near 27, and Saturday, sometimes high, you know, the sun brings high winds to Juneau. So, in the studio with Jeff and I, we have Ernestine Hayes. She is the Alaska State Writer Laureate. She was just named that the past couple of months, and she'll be the 2017 Writer Laureate for the state, and she'll be doing that position. She'll be in that position for 2 years. So, welcome to the show, Ernestine.
Thank you.
So, that's only part of Ernestine's background. She, of course, teaches out at UAS, but she has two novels. She has her first novel, Blonde Indian, won many awards, and she just has a new book out as well. So let's talk a little bit about the new book.
All right. It's The Tao of Raven, an Alaska Native memoir, and it carries forward a lot of the strands that were in Blonde Indian, an Alaska Native memoir, including some of my stories, what happened after I came back home to Juneau in the late 1980s, and also extends the story of Old Tom, who is a fictional character in Blonde Indian. He appears in Tao of Raven as well.
Oh, that's great. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Blonde Indian. Blonde Indian came out in 2006, and it won the American Book Award and was a finalist for the Penn Nonfiction Award. And this is her follow-up, and it's published by the University of Washington Press. And kind of going all over the place, but I want to talk a little bit about the Alaska State Writer Laureate program. So to become a laureate, it's an honor that a committee picks. They're looking for literary excellence, mastery in style and form, exemplary professionalism, history of advancing literary arts in Alaska communities and service to Alaskan communities, public presentation or teaching experience, a significant body of published work over time in Alaska, and the ability to travel and, I guess, to inspire and reach out to people from all over Alaska. So I just want to say congratulations on
Thank
that
you.
Honor, for that
Thank
well-deserved
you.
Honor. So that's really
It is an honor. Thank
it,
you.
It really is exciting. So can we talk a little bit about what are your plans to do, you know, as you are the Alaska State Writer Laureate for the next 2 years? Do you have hopes and dreams around that?
Well, we're still formulating a project, but the Writer Laureate is responsible for crafting a project and developing the budget and then executing it. And I'm still in the process of crafting it. I've talked to last week when Writer Laureate Frank Sos was in town. I talked to him and I got a lot of advice about what his project was and what it took to develop it. And I've been getting a lot of help from friends and family about what might work and how to do it. So I'm still designing it.
Great. When you are ready to unveil it, will you come back and tell us all about it?
I sure will.
All right. That sounds good. And then you have some travel coming up. You're doing, some book signings in Seattle and Bellingham at the end of the month.
Yes. At the end of February, I'm traveling to Seattle to do a reading at the Intellectual House of the University of Washington, and I'm doing a reading at a local bookstore there in Seattle and a bookstore in Bellingham.
That's great. And then you're teaching at a writing conference in Minnesota over the summer?
In June, yes. Yeah. I'm going to be in Bemidji, Minnesota.
And when she's not, she's out the road teaching at UAS. Aren't we lucky? So let's talk a little bit about writing. So how long did it take you to write your first book?
Blonde Indian was published in 2006, and it contained writing that I had scribbled on an old device that was called a typewriter. And so I would say it took 30 years. It has writing in there that's 20 or 30 years old.
Right. Well, you finished your MFA at UAA's Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing and Literary Arts in 2003. So would you say from 2003 to 2006, if it came published in 2006, it takes a little while once it's done. So do you think that program really helped you form
that novel? One of the requirements for the Masters of Fine Art and Creative Writing and Literary Arts is to produce a book-length thesis. And Blonde Indian was my book-length thesis. It was modified and revised and revised and revised and revised, but it was essentially my thesis.
Okay. So the first book was, let's say, a long project over 30 years that you compiled and finished while you were at the MFA program and then finished it over and over and over again. What about the second book? How long did it take you to do this?
Well, Blonde Indian was published in 2006 and Dow of Raven in 2016, so it took me 10 years. It took me 10 years. I started some of the words that are contained in Dow of Raven. I started writing almost right after Blonde Indian was published. And then 2 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be selected by Rasmussen Foundation to go down to Woodside, California, the Jurassic Writers Artist Residence, and I showed up with probably four or five different works in progress, anywhere from 2,000 or 3,000 words to 20,000 or 25,000 words in each strand, and it was my job that summer to put those strands together, and that's what became Dow of Raven.
So that was a residency. Was that a one-month long residency?
I was fortunate enough to stay there for 2 months.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yes.
And how was that experience for you?
It was wonderful, and in the interim between the two residencies, because they're month-long residencies, so in the interim, in the hiatus between the two residencies, I got to go to San Francisco for 5 days and walk around some of my old haunts and see the city and, remember and refresh some of those memories, too.
California definitely plays a part in your first book.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, but along with your memoirs, you're published in so many different genres, poetry, children's book, creative nonfiction, short stories, essays. Ernestine Hayes' work has been in the Studies in American Indian Literature, Tipton Poetry Review, Alaska Quarterly Review, Cambridge History of Western American Literature, and other publications. So do you, at this point, what are you working on?
Well, during the academic year, I usually work on student writing, and I read whatever I want my students to read, and I read their work, and I help them edit and revise and polish their work. And I'm auditing an online class that is being taught by Aaron Hollowell, out of the Kenai, University of Alaska, Kenai, and I'm...
Erin's a lovely poet.
Yeah, she is, and I'm glad I'm just auditing it, so I get to benefit from her expertise without the stress of being graded, and I do want to hopefully explore the direction of poetry.
Exciting.
Yes.
Exciting. Okay. So in closing, I would like to ask you, Ernestine, so what kind of words do you have for people who are listening who think they have a memoir or they were, you know, closeted writers or they have an idea, something about the writing process that you've learned from your many different published pieces and the two books?
Well, as I said, a lot of the words in Blonde Indian were at least 30 years in the making. I always fancied myself a writer. When I was in my teens and 20s, I fancied that I could write, and I wrote, you know, whole book-length novels and poetry and scribbled ideas and so on, but I didn't become a writer until at the age of 50, I enrolled at the University of Alaska Southeast here in Juneau, and I learned discipline. There is no greater inspiration than an externally applied deadline.
That's a lack of recognition.
And I'm not one of those I was not one of those students who say it's not homework unless it's due in the morning, but if it's homework, you'll sit down and the muse will come, but she has to find you working.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on being named Alaska State Writing Laureate.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 2nd of February, 2017. The city of New Amsterdam was incorporated on this date, 1653, where the Dutch East India Company had brought settlers. Henry Hudson, English sea captain, brought them over. He traveled up a large river, which he called the Mauritius River, though eventually it became the Hudson River in his honor. And the Dutch opened a trading post on the southern tip of Manahatta Island, where just about 11 years later, four English frigates sailed in 1664, demanded that the governor, Peter Stuyvesant, turn over the territory, and he did, and its 10,000 residents, and it was renamed New York. It was on this day, 1887, a groundhog named Phil first emerged from his burrow in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. The tradition of Groundhog's Day was born. It's the birthday of James Joyce, 1882, in Dublin, best known for his novels A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man and Ulysses, which came out in 1922. James Joyce, who was a bedraggled figure when he was young, but he was very confident in himself when he met the great poet William Butler Yeats. Joyce said, "We met too late. You were too old to be influenced by me." And Yeats said, "Never have I seen so much pretension with so little to show for it." But he did show. He went off to Paris to study medicine, but really he was writing. He wrote a book of short stories called Dubliners and wrote his great masterpiece, Ulysses, which takes place all in one day in Dublin, June 16, 1904, the exact same day that James Joyce met the love of his life, Nora Barnacle. James Joyce said about Ulysses, "The pity is the public will demand and find a moral in my book, or worse, they may take it in some more serious way, and on the honor of a gentleman there is not one single serious line in it." June the 16th, every year, in Dublin, elsewhere around the world, people gather to relive the events in Ulysses' Bloomsday. It was on this day, 1943, the Battle of Stalingrad came to an end. A year before, Hitler had begun an invasion of the USSR, hoping to encircle Soviet forces, take the city of Stalingrad, which would cut off transportation link with southern Russia. The Germans attacked from the ground and the air. By mid-September, they'd forced the Soviets back to a 9-mile strip along the Volga River. It was devastating ground combat. November, the Red Army launched Operation Uranus, surrounded the 6th German Army Division, which spent a brutal winter, very little food and ammunition. The commander asked for permission to surrender. Hitler denied his request, but the Germans finally did surrender February the 2nd. As many as 2 million people were wounded, killed, or captured at the Battle of Stalingrad. It was one of the bloodiest battles in human history. Here's a poem for today by Lee Robinson, What I Know. What I know for sure is less and less, that a hot bath won't cure loneliness, that bacon is the best bad thing to chew, and what you love may kill you. The odd connection between perfection and foolishness, like the pelican diving for his fish. How silly sex is, how having it we glimpse our holiness. What I know is less and less, what I want is more and more. You against me, your ferocious tenderness, love like a star, once small and far, now huge, now near. Poem by Lee Robinson, What I Know, from Hearsay, published by Fordham University Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Multicultural dance group Yi School will perform at the Walter Sobolev Building this first Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Yi School has performed all over the state at venues including the Governor's Inaugural Ball and the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. Everyone is welcome to this free event. Also first Friday, the Sea Alaska Heritage Store will host a Valentine's Raffle. The winner will take home a hand-carved silver lovebird pendant made by Tlingit artist Ian Day. Stop by this Friday from 4:30 to 8 p.m. This message brought to you by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
Good afternoon. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Our next guest is on the phone. Her name is Kat O'Brien, and she is a student at Northeastern University in Boston. Hey, Kat, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we're talking about North Razor clams. Let's talk about them.
Yeah. So Pacific Razor clams are one of the largest sport clamming industry in Alaska. And specifically, I've been looking at the Cook Inlet species, but we're trying to reach out to fishers across the state to try and get an idea of why people think this population is declining in recent years. So in 2014, the entire east side of Cook Inlet was closed to clamming, and the commercial industry on the western side is still open and still flourishing. And being from the East Coast, I'm wicked interested in learning what people from the Alaskan area think about this, because this fishery is so recent. I've been studying cod where we go back and we look at records from the 1600s and we're talking to dead people. And I think, like, actually having community activism is very important in science research.
Fascinating. So North Razor clams, or Pacific North Razor clams, tell me a little bit about them, like their habits and what you learned from the dead people you talked to from the 1600s.
Yeah, so Pacific Razor clams, they're an intertidal species. They really like living in sandy areas, and they kind of like dig themselves into a little hole. And so clammers, I'm sure people listening to this who clam, they know that you look for their little suction cup. And they're just filter feeders, so they help keep our waters clean, and they're really tasty.
Okay. So specifically, what do you want our listeners to do?
Yeah. So I have this survey out online. It's at the website clamsurvey.wordpress.com. And all I want is for people who have ever been involved in harvesting Pacific Razor clams to just go online, look at the survey and fill it out and tell me what they think. Why do they think this population is declining? Why is it only declining on one half of the inlet? I want people's information. I'm just curious what people think.
Okay. And you know that Southeast is far away from Cook Inlet.
Right. Yeah. I recognize that, but I figured there's people who may have traveled over there and they may have other experiences with clamming on Southeast, and they can also tell me their experiences of clamming there and what they're seeing, and given the state of the environment, given the state of management, what their experiences are.
Okay, so you heard it here. Kat O'Brien, she's a student at Northeastern University on the East Coast, and she wants to hear about your experience with Pacific North Razor clams. So here you have a very interested party to learn all about your clamming experience, no matter if it's recent or in the distant past. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, as long as you're alive, right? You don't want to talk to any more dead fisher people. So anyway, what is that URL one more time?
Clamsurvey.wordpress.com.
Okay, cool. All right, Kat, I hope you get what you're looking for.
Thanks so much.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
The tuna is tired. The seahorse is sleeping. The hammerhead's not feeling well.
The catfish is yawning. It lights out time. Down at the sea hotel.
Good night.
Good night.
Sleep tight.
Sleep tight.
Down at the sea hotel. Good night.
Tight,
down at the sea hotel.
It is 29 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city and the KTOO studios. There's a high wind warning out for Juno until Saturday. Right now, there's just little gusts, but it's supposed to go up to 60. Right now, it's 36 degrees at the airport. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He is at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And so we've talked with Ernestine Hayes, the Alaska State Writer Laureate. Then we talked to a research student in Boston about North Razor clams. And here we are to talk about First Friday with Chef Steph, who's a featured artist at the Juno Artists Gallery. Welcome
Hello.
To the show. Welcome
Thank
back.
You.
Yay. So first of all, she comes bearing gifts. She has this lovely little package of heart-shaped cookies with a beautiful glaze that are like little love letters to K2 and KRNN and KXLL. That is so sweet.
Oh, thank you. Wow.
And the other one is just beautiful heart-shaped cookies. This is probably your Wicked shortbread with lovely little pink
sprinkles.
Pink
oh,
sprinkles.
My goodness.
I was afraid what if I said sprinkles it, but no. It was really some foodie gourmet thing. You know.
They do have a different name, but I laughed when I made them. I went pink. Okay. It's Valentine's Day, and I've never done anything for Valentine's Day, so I wanted to this year, and so here I am. And the hearts, it's a take on the conversation hearts. They're conversation heart cookies, because the ones that you get at the store, yeah, they're fun, but you don't really want to eat them. And these are very delicious.
I bet. So you have things that say all different things. You have some plain ones, and then you have ones that say that you had a collection that says Nasty Woman.
I have the Nasty Woman series, and I have nice ones that say Love You, Be Mine, you know, the classic. And then, you know, I have to say I'm not really a fan of Valentine's Day. I mean, I have my own special Valentine, and but you know, Valentine's Day, I shouldn't say it's a silly day. It's a great day. Please buy my cookies. But you know, there are some. It's for the people who are maybe bitter or just don't like the day, and they say some things that aren't as nice.
Oh, so you have loving cookies and you have snarky cookies?
Yes, yes. You know, like these are like you
the
know,
yin yang of love.
It is. They might say ew, or as if, dislike. along that theme. And then I also, if you custom order some, it could say whatever. You could say, marry me. That there are some that were, I made a few custom already, and they made me blush, and others made me laugh, and it's just sweet.
Okay.
I'm waiting for that proposal. I want somebody to order cookies and ask somebody to marry them through my cookie.
Oh, that is so sweet. That is so sweet. So this is kind of like the gourmet foodie version of like the sweet, you know, in like the sweetheart little candy. But these are your yummy shortbreads.
The cookies are they're just refrigerator sugar cookies. Not just they're delicious, but I also. Those that have the sayings on it, and it is a sugar cookie, but I did make shortbread bites in the shape of hearts, and that has the sprinkles in them.
And where can people buy these things?
As you said, I'm the featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery in the Senate Building on Franklin Street, and I just dropped off a bunch of the same cookies at a little bazaar. You know that new shop that just part consignment, part boutique? It has... Every time I go in there, I buy something. House stuff and
Where
fun
is it?
Things.
What's
it's
it
behind
called?
Department of Labor, in between the Juno Hotel and Department of Labor. And you go in the parking lot, and there's this adorable little... We first saw it before they were open. We thought it was this coffee shop, and it's not. They have the most unique... It's just a fun shop, and the woman who runs it, her name is Teresa, and... I love her style. I love her eye. You know, I've bought many things in there, and she hasn't been open very long. I think maybe since November. So please come and check it out. And it's another place to get my stuff. But check out her things as well, because it's fun.
Okay. So the Juno Artist Gallery, and the name of that store was?
A Little Bazaar.
A Little Bazaar.
Yes.
By the bridge, by the Juno Hotel.
Yes.
And can they buy it any other place?
You know what? Those are not online
because
the season's too short.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to my website, if you can't make it down, call the gallery or go to my website, chefsteffs.com, and just in comment sheet say, hey, where can I find it? You know, I'm going to be social media-ing, so once again, you could message me through there. So
you heard it on Juno Afternoon that Chef Steph wants someone to propose with using her cookies as a prop, and they could say whatever you want. So all you romantics out there, as opposed to this naysayer here sitting with me, you might want to take advantage of this. And for those of you who went to the Aware 40th birthday party, Chef Steph donated a whole bunch of caramel, salted caramel shortbread, which was really crazy yummy.
Thank you. Those will be there too.
Okay.
Along with the rest of the lines. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, we're perfect. Perfect. And so let's talk about First Friday. So it's tomorrow.
It is tomorrow. Goodness, how is it February already?
I know. January went by in a blur.
Yeah.
So a very active blur. But 4:30, correct?
4:30 to 7. And once again, it's the Juno Artist Gallery in the Senate Building on Franklin Street behind the Bear's Lair.
And you are the culinary artist, but for... almost all of the other artists are visual artists and joy makers and all different types of artists, fabric, textile, all different types of things.
It's an amazing place to come and do all your Valentine shopping.
There you go.
So there is something for everyone. I was talking to someone, they said, oh, nobody wants Tom's Pots is a new member. And he said,
yay.
People just want jewelry for Valentine's Day. And I was like, oh, no. So he has the Douglas Visa mugs.
Fine.
So the Douglas passport. That's it. Mm-hmm. I was getting it wrong. So there's always something.
What's the Douglas passport?
That's the design of his mug.
Oh, nice. I love
that. The series that he has that he's doing away with. So come and get your own. I mean, before they go away. And
So I have one more question.
Yes.
So Chef Steph's here. She's talking about her Valentine line. It's that time of year. Here we are. How did you become a little foodie? Not a little foodie, but how did you become the foodie that you are? How did you become this gourmet baker?
I always loved decorating cakes and just buy box cake and decorate them. And I was an art director. This is a second career. And I was an art director in New York in the 80s, which was not a good time for that. And I was unemployed. So what was I doing? I was working on my portfolio, but I was staying home watching cooking shows and then making cakes. And then I decided to go to culinary school. And then I stopped baking, went into the savory end, and did that for the rest of the time. And then when the gallery opened, I was at a crossroads and needed something to do, and I catered a little, but started making candies and the cookies, and that took off. The shortbread and the toffee was the next corner to turn.
And then caramels.
And then the caramels and the salted licorice and the salted sesame brittle. And
she's a mad scientist in her kitchen.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And it's just been – I've just been pretty much following the trails of crumbs that led me here. And I'm so grateful for that trail of crumbs.
There you go. So you heard it here. Chef Steph, First Friday. At the Juno Artist Gallery?
Yes. Can I say one more thing? If anybody's interested in joining or thinking about becoming a member of the gallery, if you do some artwork that you enjoy to do or something, come on down. We have slots available, and First Fridays is a good time to come down and see what we're all about because there are usually more than one artist there working. There's a bunch of us, and come on down. We're open to all – I mean – whoever thought that there'd be a culinary artist. So come on down, check us out, ask some questions, pick up an application, and
get a sample?
Perhaps.
All right. Well, thank you for coming by.
Well, thank you for having me.
I wish we had a visual to this radio show because the Valentine cookies look great.
Well, everybody will have to come to First Friday then.
There you go.
All right.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
17-year-old Nick takes a float plane to his grandparents' village. It signals change for his grandfather, cousin, father, and his grandmother, Linda, the strong warp in this family whose experiences are woven together with modern and traditional storytelling, including song, dance, poetry, and 90s hip-hop. A world premiere portrait of an Alaskan family by Thlinget playwright Frank Henry Koshkatas. They Don't Talk Back runs January 25th through February 19th at Perseverance Theater. Tickets at the Jack, Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
This is Bird Note. Take a walk in a temperate woodland this month, and you might hear this chorus. A closer look and listen reveal that this foraging flock includes several species of birds, chickadees, kinglets, and even a downy woodpecker. Many bird species eat alone, so you might wonder why these birds have chosen to dine together. Different species flocking together to find food, called commensal feeding, mutually enhances success. One species assists the foraging of others. For example, in chickadee and woodpecker flocks, the woodpecker pecks off bark and moss, exposing grubs for its own consumption. But the pecking also stirs up flying insects that the chickadees swoop in to snatch. The relationship also helps the woodpecker because the extra eyes of the chickadees are on the lookout for predators. The watchdog chickadees alert the close-focused woodpecker when there's danger. Because these birds, foraging together, don't seek the same foods, the result is cooperative or commensal rather than competitive feeding. Join the flock. Become a member of your local Audubon and find ways to improve habitat for birds. Begin at birdnote.org.
The Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum is a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting the goals and activities of the Juno Douglas City Museum. Invest in your community art and history with your 2017 membership. Learn more at junomuseumfriends.org. Admission to the City Museum is free through April, courtesy of community sponsors. This message brought to you by Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum.
Hello, Juno. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from KTOO Studios in Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and he got some really lovely cookies from Steph.
I hope she read enough for everyone.
Well, yes, actually, I'm sending mine. I hope my family's not listening. I'm going to share a little with Nancy.
We're going to take them over and give them to the Wearable Heart Crew.
Yeah, not until I get a few of them. But anyway,
Nancy is
here to talk about what's going on. Art's up. Here we are.
Yeah, and you know, this is a big Thursday, so we got to do some Thursday things before we get to First Friday, which it is already. I don't know how. But anyway, Downtown Family Night at the Public Library, 5:30. This sounds fascinating. 7 to 9 p.m., CBJ Budget 101. Now, I think it is something we should all know about. So if you want to know how the budget works and what makes funding happen, Mala Cosgrove is doing a little 101 on budget. So you could go there. And I think that's at the Assembly Chambers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is Beginning Birders at Harborview at 7 o'clock, learning about local birds. And from 7 to 8 p.m., you can learn about the Peterson Hill Subdivision Project that's going in. That's out at the Mendenhall Public Library. You know, talk about sort of the plans for that new subdivision that's going in. This is a big week for theater. You have some serious choices to make here.
Okay, what are the options?
We've got They Don't Talk Back over at Perseverance, which I saw last weekend, and it's wonderful. Totally suggest that you do not miss this at all.
Written by a local
Frank Kattas. Mm-hmm. It's really wonderful, wonderfully done. There's moments of humor, all the things you want from theater. So there's that one. Home But Not Less, also written by a local playwright. That is a play built on Alaskan voices being directed by Shona Osterhout and written by Mary Ellison. It's over at McFeeters Hall this weekend, 7:30. And then I think we got a funny thing happen on the way to the forum still, or maybe we're done with that. Nope, we still got another weekend of that. On. So you just got a lot of good theater to
and that the Juno Douglas High School.
Yeah.
And they're taking that show to the Fringe Fest.
That's the game plan. Yes. So everybody ought to have a maid is my theme song. So you know. Anyway, so that's just Thursday that you could be doing some of those things. You can't do the forum thing, but you can do They Don't Talk Back or Home But Not Less there. There's tango dancing at the Channel Dance Studio. Anyway, let's move to Friday because it is First Friday. At the Canvas, we have, I'm going to use this alphabetical list because then I won't get lost. Okay, the Alaska State Museum has an exhibit by Carmel Anderson called Unheard Voices, Unheard Wisdom. It will run until March 18th. The opening reception is this Friday. It will run till 7 o'clock with an artist talk at 6. Unheard Voices, Unheard Wisdom shares the experiences of victims impacted by domestic and sexual abuse. This sounds grim, but the exhibit is beautiful. So definitely try to stop in. And do try to take in her talk. I think it should be pretty interesting. Annie Kales, so you bounce from there to there, just because of the
You're
alphabet.
Going alphabetically, right.
They didn't arrange the town alphabetically.
That's
right. Annie Kales has Sitka author John Straley and illustrator Norm Campbell on hand, personalizing their new book, 100 Poems of Spring.
All right.
COPA. Bounce back over the other side of town. New works by Alan Monroe in our cafe gallery, and they will be hosting their first tiny gallery opening with pieces by Cedar Fowler Couteau in our restroom, they say.
Wow.
I think this is no commentary on the artwork. But I think it's wonderful. Okay, we have to stop this. It's wonderful that Mark is doing this to help promote young kids' artwork. So, and as a plus, they're opening, they have a new ice cream flavor, cardamom, which will be released. So you got to go over there just to take in this whole experience. The Downtown Dames is featuring local jewelry artist, Sherry. You have to leave the room. And Hearthside Books is doing something that I really don't understand called Blind Date with a Book, and I think that sounds pretty interesting. They didn't give me dates or times on that. I mean, it's First Friday, but I don't know exactly what a blind date with a book is. So you'll have to go there and see. You were just talking with Chef Steph with these lovely Valentine-themed cookies. I mean, just point out that it is Valentine's month, and so it's a good thing we have these jewelry artists and all that sort of stuff out there. Stop in down there. The City Douglas Museum, in 2015, the Alaska State Parks kicked off its first ever artist-in-residence program out at the Ernest Greening State Historical Park, which is out near Amalga Harbor. And there's been a series of artists that spend a couple of weeks out there. Excuse me. And the museum has collected a show of all of those pieces that were created out at the Greening Park. So stop in there. That one's going to run through the 25th of February. Kindred Post has my favorite things. They're having live music with Fish Hauk and snacks. And you know you can't go into Kindred Post without coming out with something. And as I mentioned, it is Valentine's Day coming up. So, hey, Reuben Willis State Farm is doing a reception from 4 to 6:30. They present the local photographer, Joe McCabe. His stuff is beautiful, so stop in there. Sea Alaska Heritage at Walter Soboloff Building, they have a bunch of things going on. There will be a performance. They're going to be open from 4:30 to 8, and admittance is free for during that period of time. In the Clan House, Yiskuu will be dancing from 6 to 8. They will be showing their Alaska Native Masks Art and Ceremony exhibit. And there will be a raffle for a Valentine's Day gift, a silver hand-carved lovebird pendant by Tlingit artist Hien Day. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. Raffle participants don't need to be present to win. But anyway, stop in because there's a lot of stuff going on there. The canvas has Christopher Taylor's paintings and drawings under the title of Lion Low. At 7 p.m. out at the University of Alaska Southeast, spoken word artist Ebony Stewart will perform in the Rec Center. At 8 p.m. out in the valley at Squires, there's a bluegrass holiday, and at the McGivneys in the valley, Fire and McGinnis at 10:15. So you got several things you could be doing.
It's amazing what this little town puts on.
Goodness sakes, I probably forgot something. Let's see, we talked about all of... Oh, at 9 o'clock, George Kuhar will be helping the Taqueria celebrate their second birthday.
Oh, yay.
So we got music all over the place and spoken word and all kinds of stuff. On Saturday, again, we can do this CBJ budget, this time out in the valley. There's a workshop, a Lemon Creek Public Design Workshop at DZ Middle School. Boys on the Run coach training, 9 a.m. at Northern Light Church. We've got Valentine's Day crafts at Mendenhall Mall. Coffee and Collections is doing a little talk about the artist-in-residence exhibit that they have. Again, we have the plays. There's live bluegrass music downtown at the Bullwinkles every Saturday afternoon from 4 to 6. The third annual wine and brew tasting at the Rockwell, Juno Montessori is presenting this. It says there's live music, auctions, silent auctions, all kinds of ways to raise money and enjoy yourself. This is sponsored by K&L Distributors. That Canvas's annual fundraising dinner is at 6 p.m. It's an elegant evening of a Moroccan-inspired dinner and dessert prepared by the Sandpiper Chef Joe Manning. There's a live music and silent auction. There's all kinds of stuff. That's over at Elizabeth Peradovich, I believe. Wait a minute, maybe I'm wrong about that. It's at Canvas. The Catholic Community Services first annual formal gala is the one that's over at the Elizabeth Peradovich. I think you just eat your way around town, raising money for people. A night of dancing and live music. Fleet Street's performing. Luke Weld's performing. There's a buffet, all sorts of stuff. And chocolate fountain dessert.
Yes, and the proceeds go to all of the Catholic Community Services.
Meals on Wheels, all the things.
The hospice,
everything.
Many, many things.
There's also a Gold Street music concert at Resurrection Lutheran Church at 7:30. And as I mentioned, we've got the plays to go to. On Sunday, there is... a piano concert to benefit the piano fund that we're trying to raise money for the new grand piano for the new deck. So that's at 3 o'clock. It is Super Bowl Sunday. And if you're not a Super Bowl fan, then I would suggest the Sunday piano concert. It's Sue Kazama performing, and she's wonderful, and you don't often get a chance to hear Sue on her own performing. So there's just quite a few things going on. I will just say that coming right up next week is Wearable Art, and I can't remember how many tickets we're down to. There's a few on Sunday, but don't miss it. And, busy times in the old whole town tonight is all I have to say about that. Oh, World Quest. We didn't mention World Quest, did we?
Are tickets still available?
I don't know about that, but they are. That's on Friday night. At
6
right
o'clock in Centennial Hall.
Yeah, so go on over there. That's always lots of fun, too. See how much fun we have around here?
You're going to have to go to the calendar to find out all this.
And, you know,
stuff.
It's at jhc.org. And I forgot to mention, if you wanted Saturday tickets to Wearable Art and you didn't get them, we're doing we're calling it Full Stream Ahead over at the Hangar. They're live streaming the whole thing Saturday night. And there'll be complimentary hors d'oeuvres in the Hangar Ballroom. So you go over there and that'll be where the official after party is. So you'll have a head start on that.
So you're going to be
right there
for the pre-after party.
Yes.
So on and so forth.
Anyway.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be
right
back.
Thanks.
Okay, here we are. It's 3 minutes to the hour. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. The weather, we're experiencing high wind warning in Juneau, Alaska until Saturday. Right now it's a sunny with a high near 34, east wind around 15. Tonight mostly clear with a low around 20. We're looking at winds maybe up to 60 miles an hour. Tomorrow sunny near 29. Tomorrow night low around 21. Good night to come downtown and check out all the great things of First Friday. And then Saturday sunny. It looks like Sunday will be sunny too. Thank you for joining us at Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. And you can always listen at your leisure at ktoo.org. And then tomorrow, Andy Klein will be here. Always a party. Good way to wrap up your week with Andy. He'll be talking to the City Museum all about the Ernest Gruening Cabin's Artist in Residence program. Then John Straley and artist Norm Campbell will be here. And John's a well-known southeasterner who's done well for himself. He's written some lovely books, and he's got a book of poetry, and he is a fabulous poet. And then ending with the Juneau Ice Field Research Program, and then Jessica Paris to talk about National Ice Cream Day at COPA. Thanks for joining us.